and welcome to today's Job Seeker broadcast. Our topic is answering the tough interview questions. So, have you been let go from your last job because of the slow economy and are still trying to get back into the workforce? Are you discouraged because your resume is not getting any responses? Maybe you've been a finalist and the job went to an inside person. Or perhaps you're just getting started job hunting after being out of the workforce for a few years. Well, if any of these feelings are nagging at you, I'm glad you've tuned in for today's Job Seeker broadcast, and I hope our show will give you an edge for your job search and maybe just help you land that special position. Today I'm joined by a special guest. Our guest co-host is Tom Board from Denver, Colorado. Tom is one of our 12 preferred counselors. He's featured on our website. You can see Tom's picture and bio and just click preferred counselors on our toolbar. And hello, Tom, down there in Denver, Colorado.
Hi, John. Glad to be with you today.
Yeah, good to have you again on our show. Tom has been assisting men and women with their career advancement since 1990, and that's over 23 years. He has a master's degree in counseling and oversees his private counseling practice in the Denver area. Since 1990, Tom has completed over 2,500 career advancement assessments using the IDAT Career Match system. Tom holds a record for the largest number of individual career match assessments completed throughout the United States and Canada. And Tom, you and I, for the first 15 minutes, are going to talk about our topic, answering tough interview questions, and then we'll take a short break and begin to talk about the job seeker questions that are sent to us and try to unravel those. So let us launch into our topic, how to answer tough interview questions. And in one word, the answer is be prepared and don't wing it. Any other one-line zingers you want to add to that, Tom?
No, I think that's very good. I couldn't have said it more concisely.
Yeah, I mean, the word is research, research. You've got to be prepared. That is how you beat out the competition. And half of landing that job is certainly your qualifications and credentials, but the other half is how well you communicate. And so this show is devoted to helping you communicate. Now, right off the bat, probably the most frustrating, intimidating, fearful thing in an interview happens to be that first 1 to 3 minutes. You are going to a meeting in an office. Maybe you're meeting in a pickup or at a work site, and you're being interviewed. Maybe you've been flown in. And all this anxiety has been built up. Maybe the interview's over the phone. So what do you do in this first 1, 2, 3 minutes to relax and help the interviewer also relax and get accustomed to the sound of your voice and you, in a sense, find a sweet spot and get acclimated to this person? Well, there's a very simple technique, and that is, as you get started in the conversation, say something like, well, Mr. Jones, I really appreciate this time. I've been looking forward to the meeting. And as we get started, would you be able to help me by clarifying the major job duties? According to my research, I have found that the job appears to require or include this, 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 and this. Is that what you understand to be the most current description for the job? Well, then the employer responds. Now, what's happened here is that for a minute or so, you have been able to talk about something you prepared for. It's something you now are knowledgeable in, and it's sounding pretty good. You're sitting there. You're hearing the sound of your voice, and you're looking at this employer and you're following that advice to look the employer right in the eye, actually just look at the bridge of the nose, and this is going well, your feelings are positive, and you're emoting a sense of confidence, and that's how you do it. The employer is going to come back with one of two responses. They're going to say, yes, that's correct, or even better, they're going to clarify something. I would say 75% of the time they're going to clarify something, and whatever they clarify, that is the real essence of the job. And so you want to tailor the information that you give during the interview to that, really those areas that the employer emphasizes. Okay, Tom, any feedback or comment on that?
No, the only thing that I might just want to underline again is just the idea of being able to relax both you and them at that time by having a direction to go, because sometimes they might have done this many times, they might never have done this, and for you to kind of have a direction, it really does put you in a place where you've kind of subtly taken charge of the conversation by purposefully putting something out there and then giving him a chance to respond. And I think it just builds a relationship right from the beginning. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, and Tom, you and I also work with employers, and employers repeatedly tell us they don't like to do interviews. This is a very uncomfortable, and really, when you talk about who's the most uncomfortable, the employer is the one that has most at risk. And you know, they didn't go to Harvard Management School to find out how to interview, and even if they did, it's doubtful whether that has everything they need to know. And that employer is thinking about all the failures and the lawsuits and all of the bad hires that were made in the past. So by coming in and being relaxed and asking permission to talk about the major job duties, it also shows you're prepared, you've done your homework. Okay, from there, I want to highlight what are what I call the three command interview questions. These are the core essential three. You must have these nailed down and be ready to respond. And what I'm saying is not only know the answers, but if you're not asked these questions, you need to answer them anyway by tagging it on to another question the employer asks. So if the employer were to say something like, tell me something about yourself, it's a very popular question, it's not one of my favorites, but it's asked a lot, then you would turn around and say, well, would you like to know this or this or this? And that would be one of these three command questions. So the command questions are, what are the things in this position that really interest you? Why are you interested in this position? And even, why are you interested in our organization? What is positive? That's a passion question. Number two, the standard, what are your qualifications for this position? So what is it about your background that leads you to believe that you can do this job and make a contribution to our company? And number three, how did your last position prepare you for this position? Whatever you've done in the past as a job seeker, that is your stereotype. So if you were in the military, you have a stereotype. If you were a pastor or clergy or ministry, a minister, that is a stereotype. If you were, if you had your own business and you're applying to a company for a job, that's a huge stereotype. If you're a policeman, that's a stereotype. If you're a teacher, and so on and so on. And so it's up to you to demonstrate to the employer what is it about that current or past position that equips you to do this new job. Don't leave it up to them. Now, Tom, let's go back to each of these and kind of sort of detail them out a little bit.
All right.
why are you interested in this position? This is probably 50% of the interview right here. The employer has to get a gut conviction that you fit their culture, that you're just one of the gals or one of the guys. And so if everyone does hunting and fishing, you better have some kind of something you did whenever, and you should have picked that up in your research. If the company has a very green sustainability focus and value, you better talk about that. I like this about your company. Sure, you can get information about market share. You can get information about how many employees or how many organizations. But it's sort of the subtle things that define what it's like to work here that you really resonate with, and that employer needs to know that you know and you like it. Tom, any other thoughts or questions on that?
Well, I would love for you to kind of just emphasize again the significance of the research element before you even go into an interview, because this is really the heart of that.
Yeah, and
prepared right here.
Yes, that is right. The complaints, one of the many complaints employers have when they do interviews is that the person is not prepared. And this is probably the area where someone is the least prepared. Where they're the most prepared is how to talk and sound like they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. Most people have got that one down, and we'll have some comments on that. And so it is important to find out one very good place to get information. There are two good places. Obviously, you can Google the name of the company and get some good information. Maybe there's stuff on their website. But another excellent place is your local metro library, and ask. There's usually a place to search. You type in a search feature, and you can have the reference librarian do some research on the industry that organization is part of, as well as the company name. If it's a local headquartered company, even better. You can get some local publications, the newspaper, magazine, so on, that have been written up about that company. Those are just excellent, excellent places. And all you're trying to do is communicate, I've done the homework, I understand where you guys are coming from, I am looking forward to joining the team. Now, part of the spirit of that is demonstrating that you are a contributor as opposed to someone who's going to sit there and just want a paycheck. So there's that. You've already shown some proactive momentum. We'll pick up the rest of this after the break, Tom.
Okay, great.
Okay, John, we have a short 2-minute break. Today we've been talking about job search tips, but you do a lot more for men and women who are struggling with mid-career issues.
That's right, Evan. We do. We help men and women find that career sweet spot which can give their life meaning and purpose.
Do you really think that anyone, regardless of education, present job, or a reentry homemaker with no current marketplace skills, can really believe that there is something special out there?
Yes, Evan, I believe they can find a fulfilling career and get hired to do it.
You know, John, as I've talked with you about career advancement, I've been thinking about all those thousands of mid-career adults who go back to school to earn a college degree or even an advanced graduate degree, and yet...
Well, yeah, Evan, and yet they don't get hired in their field after they finish the degree, right?
Right. Yeah, it seems so sad.
Well, there is a brighter picture that advanced education can really pay off if only the student took the time to find his or her sweet spot and then choose a degree which complements the career choice.
Boy, that really makes sense. Can we talk more about this during the next break?
Certainly.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our broadcast and pick up where we left off.
And we're back to our Job Seeker broadcast. My special guest today is Counselor Tom Board from Denver, Colorado. Tom is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. And you can see Tom's picture and bio on our website. Just click on Preferred Counselors. Tom, before the break, we were talking about the tough interview questions and the three absolute key core questions. And we finished talking about the first one, why are you interested in this position in our company? And we're just now moving to the second question, what exactly are your qualifications? There are two kinds of qualifications. First, what are the skills you've learned that demonstrate you can do the job duties? And what the employer is looking for is you know how to do this. You've done it before, and I just want you to tell me so that what I read on your resume I can relate to, and there are going to be some questions about that. So it's more of a validation confirmation. But what the employer is really after is something between the lines, and there's usually a skeptical spin here that just is a cultural issue in terms of employers. During interviews, there's this sort of a stigma of, I don't trust you, I don't believe you, prove it to me. Very, very few times are employers going into imputing trust and imputing credibility right from the get-go. So there's, I know everybody lies, I know everybody's trying to build up a lot of hype and so on. I want to cut through that. What the employer is really wanting to do is get to the heart, the core of who you are. Think when you first meet someone at a party, at a gathering, are you skeptical or optimistic? Most people are somewhat skeptical. They're, quote, checking the person out. And so that's what the employer is going to do. And the more you can help the employer talk about the essence and core of the kind of person I am. We call it a cameo statement. A cameo is sort of the nugget, the nutshell of your persona. And so I'm the kind of person who, boom, boom, boom. And ever since high school, I've been inclined to. And you want to maybe pick three, no more than five traits that have been consistent in your life, not just your work life, but in your life, things like character, team builder or team player, responsible, ethical, some of these key traits that really demonstrate the kind of person you are. Let me pause there, Tom. How about some comments on this?
Well, I think that's very good. I think that's where knowing yourself, having done some assessment work, understanding your personality, having spent some time thinking about who you are, and like you said, putting it in a nutshell in a few words and being able to articulate yourself well really invites them into really seeing you, and I think that's exactly what you're wanting from them.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise you have to require the employer to go dig that all out. And
correct.
One of the things that really irritates me, and I've heard this from employers, is resumes that have a little summary at the top, and they say excellent communicator and deep problem solver, and there are all these adjectives that point to how great and how wonderful, and you kind of scratch your head, well, then why are you unemployed if you're so great? You know, obviously there are good reasons. I really don't like that snow and fluff. I like just very clear statements that are able to be verified. They're quantified in terms of numbers and results and percentages. Those are the things. But those are your skills and in your past work experience and this inner heart, this inner core of your essence, some temperament traits, some natural talents. Those are the things that the employer wants to see in terms of continuity. The employer wants to know, well, after the honeymoon is over, I need to know what kind of a worker you're going to be here. And if you can explain that and document it, then, you know, I think we're there. Okay, let's go to ready to go to number three, Tom?
You bet.
How did your last position prepare you for this one? You want to pick about three key points here and explain how in your last job or your present job you did this and this and this, or you accomplished such and such, and that has equipped you. Now, those job seekers that are attempting to make a career change, going from policeman to a social worker for inner city youth, Tom and I deal with those kind of things mostly every day. However, it's very difficult to try to explain this in a job interview when you're competing with other applicants that are involved in social service and they're going from agency A to agency B, and they've been doing it for 5 years. So all the preparation and all the research could go for naught here. The time to explain the essence of a career transition and how all your work life has led up to this new breakthrough of this new career, that's really for jobs that are not posted, called the hidden jobs, and you're having a dialogue with the senior decision maker talking about opportunities in the future. There's no competition. There's nobody else that you're being compared to, and that person now is developing a relationship with you. So the key advantage when you're making a career change is you want a warm relationship so the person is inclined, they're positive and wanting to listen to your story. If you're answering an ad, if you're responding to a vacancy, then you're really behind the eight ball. You've got to prove that you can do the job because you've done it before. This last question is very, very key. Well, Tom, that's about all I have on that. Any other comments before we go to the 32 tough interview questions?
No, I thought that was very good, John. I really, and even as we look at the 32 tough interview questions, in many ways, these three command interview questions really are the core of what's really needing to be known, and these are just other questions that kind of flow around that.
Yeah, you've got to get the three core, and then you're ready to answer the others. So you and I talked ahead, and I asked you to look over this list of 32 and pick three that you liked, so fire away here.
All right. First of all, I love these questions. They're just fantastic. I think they people, if they had that list and were prepared for these, they would have an opportunity to kind of communicate themselves well. Well, I'm just going to pick three that I were kind of intrigued with as I went through this. The first one I have here is, in what ways do you think you can make a contribution to our organization?
Ah, excellent, excellent pick. The employer is definitely interested in your qualifications. But more than that, the employer wants to understand, if I hire you, so what am I getting? What are you planning or projecting you can do for us? And, you know, the answer is, well, I'll be a good employee. Well, that's not going to cut it. So this, the answer to this question comes back to this research that has to be done ahead of time in terms of the nature of the position and lining up the nature of the position, the job duties, with your background. I think that based on the clarification of the job duties, there are three significant contributions that I feel I could make just right off the get-go, right at the beginning. And then as time develops, because of this strength that I have, I see an ongoing, continuous growth with the position and the organization in this manner. The way you predict growth in a job and in a company is the innate natural talent that a person has. And so this comes natural to me. Most every position I've had, I will start at the at a certain level, and then as I get to know the culture better and my colleagues and the work culture, you know, the work style and so on, it just seems that this starts to come natural to me. I start understanding. I get it. And so every year I'm a lot better than I was the year before. So there's a sense of movement, a sense of growth, as opposed to just I'm sitting here, I'm doing my job, and I'll be a good, ethical, honest employee. That is not going to give you a competitive edge. Okay, any comment or question before we go to another one, Tom?
No, that's really good. I think that just to underline again what you're saying is the more that you really do understand who you are and how that would really make a contribution to what they're looking for is just essential to make those connections for them, because that's what they're looking for. They want to know who you are in a way that will really fit what they're trying to do.
Yes. Okay.
All right.
Another
question here is, why aren't you hired now?
Well, you know, if most people are embarrassed that they're unemployed. What I've tried to do there is turn it around to make it a positive. And the positive is, Mr. Jones, my work is very important to me. And when my last situation became evident that things were not going to be there and I needed to depart, I wasn't really in a position to just grab anything that came along. And so I'm very careful and methodical. As a matter of fact, in order to give me the freedom to choose that very best position, I picked up some survival jobs just to keep the wolf away from the door. And so that's where you can voice, you know, the stopgap kind of things you've done. That is not a problem as long as you reinforce that you have this overarching career goal. This is who I am. This is what I want to do. This job fits that. And I'm holding out until for the best option. And I really like your organization. Okay, Tom, we need to stop for a break here.
All right.
We're taking a short 2-minute break to ask John Bradley some questions about pursuing an advanced degree as a strategic step to a better job. John, in our last break, you suggested that more education can be a curse as well as a blessing.
That's right, Evan. If a person chooses more education to acquire skills they don't have...
You mean innate skills they don't have.
Right. Someone who thinks they can gain hardwiring skills through education, well, I'm sad to say that for this person, there will be limited career success.
Hmm. So give us the positive side of the coin.
Well, the good side is that by choosing wisely, that is, the right career, an advanced degree can work wonders and even help the person get hired with the employer of their choice.
Well, that sounds encouraging. And I know you have more on this subject, like how does one know if a new career is really right for them and worth all that additional education?
That's right, Evan. We can discuss that on our next break, how to know for sure.
Thanks, John. If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's go back to our broadcast.
Yes, and we're back to our Job Seeker broadcast. My special guest today is Counselor Tom Board from Denver, Colorado. Tom is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. Tom, we just finished two additional questions just before the break, and I asked you if you would pick three. So do you have another zinger
I do. This is one of those questions where sometimes people get caught off guard because it doesn't seem like it's actually flowing with what an interview would be like. But the question is, what have you read recently?
Yes. Well, there are two styles of interview. And if you're listening and observing, you can notice this right away. The one style that I do not like, but it's very prevalent, is a checklist style. And that's where an individual has a set amount of questions, and they're noting the responses. And then when they're all done, they're going to compare the answers, and then the one that gave the best answers gets the job. The other is a more intuitive approach where the person is trying to kind of get to know you under the skin and, you know, in your heart and your feelings, and they're just sort of maneuvering their way around. And so tell me what you've been reading is kind of one of those questions. They're just sort of tossing this out there to see what you're going to do with it. And it's important to be prepared. This would be like, what are your favorite restaurants, or what are your favorite movies? It's just so what caught your attention. Now you can really fluff this up and talk about the latest and most popular books that have to do exactly with the job or the economy or your profession. That's fine. Maybe one title would go to that. And you could say something like, well, usually I'm reading something that has to do with my profession. In the last book I read, blah, blah, blah. However, I also enjoy, and that you would throw in a novel or perhaps something on outdoors or a biography. Biographies are great, absolutely great, especially biographies of individuals like Teddy Roosevelt, Abraham Lincoln, Madame Curie of the, trying to remember, she was the one that discovered penicillin. Is that right, Tom?
I think so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you want to pick those that really stand out in the biography area. So, you know, that would be the pick. But don't just snow it with all three of your books. Yeah, right. Nobody's going to believe you that, you know, we're in your profession or in business or so on. Okay, well, I think that takes care of some zinger questions, Tom. How about some job seeker questions that we have received that we can respond to?
All right. Well, the first one I have here is Jim from Portland, and he writes in, I just filed for bankruptcy in my landscaping business. It's taken me about 4 years to pay off the debt. Now I need to find a new job. I'm trying to go to school. How do I choose a major for a good job?
You know, with this slow economy, I've had a lot more bankruptcy issues that have to be dealt with. And I want to commend Jim for hanging in there and paying off the debt. But it's very possible that Jim could be jumping out of the frying pan and into the fire by just going to school to go to school. A lot of entrepreneurs, they're very good at being entrepreneurs, and a lot of them are not very good students. And so there's always that nagging thing in the back of their mind. Well, if the business doesn't go, I guess I need to go back to school to finish whatever, meaning they're not a complete person until they finally get the degree. I don't buy into that, but some people have that feeling. Or to become a better candidate, I need to have a degree. I don't buy into that unless it's absolutely necessary. So the answer in short to Jim's question, Jim needs to find the person that has the job he wants, not pay a lot of money to go to school. When he meets that person, and that person will then tell him, well, if you want to do what I'm doing, here are the steps, and one of those steps may be additional education. But certainly, if there is additional education, that person will say, here's the major you need to have, and even better, here is the best campus or here's the best program. You want to choose the campus and the program that has the greatest number of referrals, internships, field experiences, that's where you're going to get the job. Okay, Tom, how about another one?
All right. I have one here from a lady in Ohio. Her name is Teresa, and she writes in and says, I am from the Philippines, and I would like to relocate back there sometime soon. I have been doing office work for the past 20 years. How does one go about getting a job overseas?
Well, this does come up, and a lot of times it comes up with people, they want their first job overseas. So we're assuming, because Teresa's from the Philippines, there is no problem that a Yankee going overseas is going to have in terms of cross-cultural adjustment. So Teresa is very acclimated back there. Maybe she has family. Maybe she was born there. And so we don't have that issue to address. What it sounds like is she wants a list of job vacancies in the Philippines so that she can apply to those vacancies while in the U.S., maybe have the company fly her out there for an interview. Well, I really would be skeptical if there's any employer that's going to be positive towards somebody in the United States, whether they're prior Philippine descent or not, seeking to apply for positions, because there are going to be plenty, plenty, plenty of people locally that employer does not have to go at risk to talk to about the position. So the best way Teresa can compete for vacancies in the Philippines, she's got to get a hold of somebody she knows, hopefully a family member. That person will lead her to positions and vacancy postings that are local. Now, Teresa can also do this on the Internet, but there are advantages to connecting with people that are local. There may be even a temp agency, local temp agency, that she could connect with there, but she's going to have to do it through a family member. And she is going to have to pay for a plane ticket to go there and do prospecting and at least be there a week, maybe two, take some vacation time and do some prospecting on location. It's almost impossible. Now, if she was in some very high specialty area of science or engineering or medicine or IT work that was very, very rare, then it's reasonable that she could be applying online on an international basis. But 20 years doing office work really is not that much of a sought-after, unique role. You can find somebody local to do that. So, any thoughts?
John, Well, yeah, I just want you to talk a little more. I know we've talked before, even for folks just looking for a job here in the States, we've talked about networking and the importance of relating and connections and finding that. It sounds like this is even more important that she would work through that avenue, having to deal with the fact she's so distant from the job market before she'd ever even go over there for 2 weeks to have something kind of lined up through her network. Am I hearing you right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if we're going to maximize social media, and we've talked about this on other broadcasts, then what Teresa needs to do is she needs to go to LinkedIn to find if there are any friends, colleagues, classmates that are working for specific named companies that she knows are large employers in the city that she wants to relocate to. And having identified those individuals, she then can line up some exploratory prospective types of interviews when she would fly out and spend a week or two. So it's not just get an airplane ticket, fly out, and then get on the phone and start making appointments. You want to have things laid out ahead of time, but you do need to use your local contacts to help you arrange for the appointments. And I would say if we're looking for a number of appointments, 3 a day is a very good number to shoot for, 3 appointments a day. You can do more, but 3 a day is going to make your trip worthwhile.
That's excellent. Very good. Well, I have another question here from Bobby in Branson, Missouri. And what he writes is, I just graduated from college and have been volunteering in a community service nonprofit. There are no jobs in this organization, but I would like to work there if there was any way. How can I find a similar job?
Let's congratulate Bobby for getting that volunteer position and finding the organization that he would like to work for. So let's just assume that this has just happened, and Bobby's been doing this volunteer work for a short time. Step one would be to go to the department head that Bobby wants to work for and express his appreciation and his admiration for the organization and to ask, I really would like to work here. Would you have some recommendations? Are there other departments that might have vacancies? Are there other specific tasks that I could be doing? Is there any further education that would further qualify me? So that would be step one. I'm assuming Bobby may have already done that. Now, because Bobby's already there, he has a huge advantage. There's a final little piece on this, and we'll pick it up after the break, Tom.
We're taking a short 2-minute break at the final quarter of our show to ask John Bradley about the wisdom of pursuing an advanced degree as a strategic step to a better job. John, in our last break, you left us hanging with the statement that we could know the right career for sure, for sure. Those were your very words, that we could know if a future career direction is right and worth any investment of more education.
Right, Evan. Those were my very words. You can know the right career for sure, for sure.
Okay, so how does one know?
Well, let's think about house hunting. You are meeting with a realtor and asking that person to help you find the ideal home that has, say, 3 bedrooms, a good neighborhood, and so on. The realtor does a computer search and finds 5 houses for sale which fit your preferences.
Okay, I'm with you so far.
Well, here you have the pictures, and on the computer you can take a virtual tour of each house. Are you ready to make a decision to buy that one?
Well, no, I'm not ready. Virtual reality is good for a start, but I need something more tangible. I mean, I want to see the house. I want to walk in the rooms, look at the backyard.
You mean you want to walk through the house before you buy it, right?
Right.
Well, that is the same approach to selecting your ideal career. You want to meet the person who has your job.
You mean meet face-to-face?
Yes, face-to-face at the job site, not over coffee. To make a confident decision, you need to see, feel, touch, taste, hear, smell, talk, and finally dream. Then you will know for sure, for sure.
So where are you going to find that person? I don't know all the people employed out there in 50 states.
Well, Evan, because this step of career validation is so important, our mid-career advancement services provide that link for our clients to find that person in their city who represents each recommended career.
So the hopeful career seeker can know for sure, for sure.
Yes, he and she can know for sure, for sure.
Well, John, this has been a most interesting journey.
Thanks, Evan.
I want to encourage any of you who are feeling the stress of a dead-end job to go to our website, www.idacgroup.com, and make contact with one of our preferred counselors. Each of these seasoned men and women are professionals at helping you discover your wiring. You will see the reference Preferred Counselors at the top of our toolbar. John, we still have the last quarter of your show. Let's return.
Let's do it.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. And now, John, let's return to the final quarter of our show.
And here we are back at our Job Seeker broadcast. My special guest today is Counselor Tom Board from Denver, Colorado. And Tom, just before the break, we were discussing the issue of Bobby in Branson, Missouri, who is volunteering at a nonprofit and would love to work there, but there are no vacancies. And so what should he do? And we discussed that, and there's just one final little piece here. What Bobby needs to do is to have a list of similar types of nonprofits, and he needs to start doing some informational interviewing in those other nonprofits and indicate that he's currently involved, and let's see, I'm hesitating because he can't say he's working for because he's volunteering. And so volunteer is really probably the weakest level of involvement without pay. And so he is part of XYZ organization, or he's affiliated with, or he's assisting them with such and such a project. Maybe those would be better terms. And he is looking for an opportunity with these other groups. Now, the way to really leverage your position with this nonprofit that you want is to get an offer somewhere else and then come back and say, boy, I'd really like to work for you guys, and so-and-so just offer me a position. Is there some way we could work something out? And those would be all the, you know, the options. Any comment there, Tom?
No, I actually I've had a daughter who worked for a nonprofit, just kind of a part-time kind of position for a number of years, and through just making connections and contacts, she kind of eventually kind of worked her way slowly up into working more there. And it is really just an issue, I think, even for her. She was thinking of moving to a different nonprofit when another job opened up in this nonprofit that she was able to apply for, and they took her. So sometimes it is just getting on someplace and beginning to kind of get your feet wet in that. And I love what you said as far as how to go about doing that, just to kind of get into what you're wanting to do and let it grow from there.
Yeah, I mean, Bobby's done a huge step of getting inside, and so he just needs to shine, but also needs to be active out there looking both within the organization, definitely have that discussion with a department head that he would like to work for, but get out in the community and look at some of these others and see if there are other possibilities, and then come back and say, hey, I have an offer here. Is there something we can work out? And there is nothing wrong, absolutely nothing wrong, with Bobby continuing to volunteer and getting a survival job on the side, waiting for that golden moment where he can get on board. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
How about another job seeker question?
All right, here's another one. This is from Doug in Washington. He says, I'm a salesperson doing consultative type of sales for a residential cabinet countertop installation company. Recently, the company management made some changes which I felt were not ethical. Should I quit my job before having a new position? How do I explain this problem to a future employer?
Ooh. Okay, well, we got two issues here. We have the issue that of continuing to work if there's an ethical issue that's come up. And then secondly, anticipating a job interview somewhere else, what to say. Well, a lot of the response or advice is going to depend on how financially stable Doug is, and how much risk he can go. Usually it's 3 months on the inside, 6 months on the outside to secure a new position. And so definitely Doug needs to get out and beat the pavement to find a new position. He's going to find a position the quickest by going to similar types or related types of companies. Now, if this ethical issue happens to be more of the style of the company, then perhaps this may also hinder him because he's associated with that company and they have a reputation for da-da-da-da-da. If it's an ethical issue that's more internal and people don't know about it, then that would be a whole different issue. But certainly Doug needs to start looking right now. Whether he quits before he gets a new job or not is dependent on two things. First, does he have the money to sustain? There's nothing wrong with quitting. It's just whether you can afford to do so. And secondly, the other factor is, when you go to work, is this ethical issue really interfering with your relationships at work? It's going to start throwing sand in the gears. It's going to grind you down. Every day you're going to work, you're trying to avoid so-and-so, or you're trying to hide or play defense. And that is going to hinder one's optimism and positive, cheerful nature when talking to a new employer. The more you get ground down in your current job, the more you subconsciously impute to that new employer the doubt and the concern they're going to do the same to you like the last guy did. And that'll happen to you subconsciously. So in a way, roundabout, I guess what I'm saying is get out of that job as fast as you can, as long if it is, in effect, grinding you up. How to explain this to a future employer, you never win if you talk dirt, talk down about your past employer. You never win, even if you're right. And so the best you could say is, during the course of employment, I guess everyone's experienced times where there were misunderstandings. One's employer and the individuals just didn't see eye to eye, and I unfortunately experienced one of those times, and I just felt it was time for me to go. And I've just never had a situation like this in my 20 years of employment, but those things happen. I've had many friends where that's occurred, and I just needed to take a break and get out. So, and then if the employer presses on, well, what really was going on there, say, you know, it's a more of a personal nature, and I would prefer not to go into detail if that's okay, you know. Now, if there's any hint of an impropriety on the part of the employee, the job hunter, him or herself, is the one that caused this issue, or there's a potential of being labeled as the problem person, then it's good to get a letter of recommendation from somebody at the company where one worked that sings your praises, that says, you're the greatest guy, boy, you know, good contributor, and on and on and on. Certainly it's not going to be from the person that this ethical issue arose, but some senior decision maker in that organization. What I've seen happen in the past is a person is hired, and then a year or a few months later, that hiring employer moves on or gets a promotion, new boss, and the two are not getting along. And this isn't the job that I was hired for. And so now those sometimes can be couched as unethical. Tom, we're out of time. Thank you so much. This has been a great discussion today.
And so that concludes our Job Seeker broadcast for this week. Our host has been job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John is president and founder of the IDAC Group. He's been helping mid-career men and women find their sweet spot since 1973. John has authored 4 career advancement books. He led the development team for the premier IDAC Career Match instrument, which has assisted over 30,000 career seekers nationwide. John has personally trained over 600 counselors, college professors, and consultants in career advancement and job search. And he's personally selected 12 of these 600 whom he highlights on his website. These men and women are independent practitioners whom John has personally trained. They are not employees nor affiliated with the IDAC Group, and they've not been paid any fee to be featured. They are good, honest professionals who have gained John's approval over many years of successful practice. I'm Evan Newman, and I invite you to join us next week at this same time for our next live broadcast. Say, do you know someone who is frustrated in their job search? Why not send them a tweet, email, or a Facebook note about our free broadcast? Maybe your friend can learn something which will land them that next job. We invite you to participate in our broadcast by sending your job search questions during our live broadcast. Those questions received during the live broadcast will receive John's priority attention. Thanks for listening. Best wishes, and may God bless you in your job search.